from time to time in the life of a Christian, people struggle with decision-making. Sometimes we make decision-making a little bit harder than it should be. There are some things that we know are always wrong, and there's some things that we know are always right. In Galatians chapter 5, we're told to walk in the Spirit and not fulfill the lust of the flesh. The flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. These are contrary to one another. So you say there's the dark side and there's the light side. There's flesh and there's Spirit, and those things are diametrically opposed. In Galatians chapter 5, in verse 19, it lists some of those things which it says are evident that are works of the flesh. Galatians chapter 5, verse 19 says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contention, jealousy, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God." So when it comes to this rather lengthy list here, it's very evident that those things are works of the flesh. That's what Paul calls them. And he says it's evident. Everybody knows that you are not supposed to do these things or should. So these are things that it's easy to understand that they are always wrong. And he goes on, verse 22, and says, "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law." So you've got the good list and you've got the bad list. So, you know, you don't have to struggle understanding at least these things that are listed here, what is right and what's wrong and what's the direction that you should go. Some would like for the Bible to reveal a list of everything that's right and everything that's wrong, so we wouldn't have to struggle making decisions. And the book is just not that big to address every conceivable situation that comes up. But I believe there are principles which should be applied. And years and years ago, I heard a lesson on the subject that I have liked, and I've kept over the years, that I'd like to share with you about how we can make decisions a little bit more simple when it comes to those things that are not specifically mentioned. You know, certainly there are things that people experience today that were not even experienced in my childhood. You know, somebody posted the other day what a selfie would look like, you know, back in our day, and it was a picture of a phone, you know, on a cord, and you know, it makes no sense to the kids. They, what is that thing? They have never seen a phone on a cord before, and VCRs and having to cook without a microwave. Can you imagine having to wait 20, 30 minutes to eat something because you didn't have a microwave? So there's things that we deal with today that people years ago didn't deal with. But when it comes to biblical principles, are there things that we experience today that it's difficult for us to look to the Word of God and see, you know, well, the Bible doesn't tell me how to handle the Internet. The Bible doesn't tell me how to handle things that I'm dealing with in today's modern society? Well, I would argue the fact that there are principles that we can apply if we truly want to do what God wants us to do. That's really the question. Do we really want to do things that will help us to grow as Christians? So we'll look at that this evening. One of the first things that I believe that we should look at is the principle of edification. Edification is just a fancy word for, does it build me up? Does it make me better? In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul says, "All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify." Does that mean that Paul did not have to obey the law, that he was some kind of exception, that all things are lawful for me? I don't know about you, but for me, everything, I can do anything that I want. No, that's not the point that Paul was making. The point that he was making was all things that God has not told me are unlawful or lawful. I can do what I want to do when I'm within the restrictions of God's parameters. So I can do anything that I want to do that's lawful. But he says that all things that are lawful are not helpful. And so the question is this, when I'm trying to make a decision, should I do this? Should I practice this? Should I participate in this activity? Is it something that will build me up? 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 26, how is it then, brethren, whenever you come together, each of you has a psalm, has a teaching, has a tongue, has a revelation, has an interpretation. Let all things be done for edification. And if you remember what's being addressed here in 1 Corinthians 14, it's the subject of spiritual gifts that were prevalent in the church in that day for the confirmation of God's Word. And there was a problem in that people were talking above one another and trying to have preeminence and get attention and, you know, being able to pray, being able to speak in tongues, whatever it might have been that was the spiritual gifts, those all were all things that were good, and people would want to practice those gifts. But Paul says, don't lose control of what's going on here. The overriding benefit of you doing these things is for edification. So if it doesn't edify, if it's not building up the congregation, then you just need to keep your mouth shut. You need to exercise self-control if it's not edifying. So you could say, you know, any of those things in and of themselves are good, but if they're not used to edify, then they're not good. So that's really what Paul's saying. Everything is lawful for me, but I'm going to put it into context of, if I'm going to do this, is it going to be helpful for me? Is it going to edify? You know, I've gotten to where I like to sleep in sometimes. And some of us may like to do that. Some of us may stay up too late and need to sleep in because we stayed up too late the night before watching TV or whatever. And is it lawful to sleep in? Well, you know, I think that it is lawful to sleep in. I don't know that there's any law against that. You know, I have a next-door neighbor that seems to not want me to sleep in because he's always out there working on his motorcycle and his car that's really loud. And I'm looking into what the noise ordinance is, but that's beside the point. But if I want to sleep in, I can sleep in as long as my neighbor allows me to do that. But if I sleep in so much that I lose my job, if I sleep in so much that I can't get to work, if I sleep in so much that I can't get services on time, you know, that may give me a problem. Lawful to sleep in, but is it really edifying me? No, it's not helpful to me, as Paul said. Is it helpful? No. All things should be done to edify and to be helpful. And furthermore, things should be done, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31, therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Everything that we do should be to the glory of God. In Titus chapter 1, verse 10, it says, not pilfering, but showing all fidelity, that they may adorn the doctrine of God, our Savior, in all things. So the things that we do should be to the glory of God. And if we do something, make a decision to do something, and it cannot be said that doing that would be to the glory of God, then that's a questionable practice. Is it something that would adorn the doctrine of Christ? If not, then we need to question that as well. So when you're making a decision, and maybe the Scriptures do not point you in a direction one way or another on that, you need to apply these principles. Is it going to edify me? Also, the principle of excess. Is it going to slow me down? Will it slow me down? Hebrews chapter 12 is one of those passages that uses the sports metaphor. Hebrews chapter 12, 1 and 2. We also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. When athletes are training, many times they will put weights on their arms and they'll put weights on their legs so that they have to have more resistance when they are working out. But when it comes time for the race or whatever the athletic event may be, they don't leave those weights on because that's just going to slow them down. They've used those to help them exercise and become more strong. But to leave those on during a competition would be very foolish. And when the Hebrew writer says, "Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, and lay aside every weight and the sin," that's always been interesting to me that it tells us to lay aside the weight and the sin, as if the weight and the sin are two different things. Well, of course, I'm going to lay aside sin. That's a no-brainer. That falls into the context of what we said at the beginning. There's things that are clearly wrong, things that are clearly right. It's clearly wrong to sin. Well, what is this weight that may not be sin? Back to the metaphor of the weight, which would be an encumbrance or needless bulk. A runner might go out and get drunk the night before a race. You know, that's clearly wrong. That's clearly a sin. It's very foolish. And he might come in to the race with a wool coat and heavy boots on. Is he going to win? Well, is that wrong? No, it's not wrong, but it's clearly foolish for somebody that wants to win a race to come out in an overcoat. You know, that would be something that would be very unusual. Michael Phelps, years ago, you know, he was certainly in the news quite a bit because he was behaving in such a way that really wasn't conducive to his training. You know, he was partying and smoking marijuana and getting drunk and things, and that was an encumbrance to him, and certainly that was sin. But things that are going to hinder you in the race are questionable. And you need to consider that. Is it something that's going to slow me down? It would not be a sin for me to take Jarrell out on a date on Saturday night, go out for a nice dinner. I mean, there's no reason to do that since we're already married. That's just a joke. But for me to take her out and stay out really late, go to a late movie, that might be something good to do. But it might hinder me in my worship on Sunday morning because I didn't go to bed early enough. And as interesting as Rex is, I'm just there, you know, nodding off in Bible class. You know, one of the advantages of preaching is I never go to sleep when I'm preaching. But, you know, other people might because they may have stayed out too late on Saturday. Some of the fault may be mine too, but it might be that they're too tired because they have spent too much time not resting. So is it wrong to go out on Saturday night? No. Could it become an encumbrance or a needless weight? Yes, it could if it prevents me from doing something else that I need to be doing, like worshiping God. So nothing wrong with those things. You could say the same thing about sports. We have many people in the state of Alabama that are involved in sports, and if they're not involved in sports, they are involved in watching them. And there's nothing wrong with being a fan. But can that become excessive? It can become excessive when people are spending all their money on sports and not you know, spending any on their spiritual life and contributing to the church, or the sporting events cause them to have a conflict with worship, and they choose to participate or to view the sports more than they do their service to God. So you can see that there are things that are good or right or lawful when they are taken to an extreme or they get into the way of things that should be our priorities, then they become excess and they slow you down in the race. Another principle is that the principle of enslavement. The principle of enslavement. Will it bring me under bondage? In 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 12, Paul says, "All things are lawful for me, all things are helpful, all things are lawful, but I will not be brought under the power of any." In Romans chapter 6, verse 16, he makes a similar comment. That do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, that you are that one slave whom you obey, whether of sin or death, or of obedience to righteousness? So we can become enslaved to things, and we do not want that to happen. Paul said, I will not be brought under the power of anything. And so, if, for example, there is a proper use for drugs, and as you know, I've had kidney stones before, so I realize that drugs come in handy when you have a kidney stone. It's very helpful. But if I take those drugs at other times, when I don't really have aches and pains, because I like the way that those drugs make me feel, and I become addicted to those, and I start trying to get a hold of those as much as I can, or go to the doctor and act like I'm feeling bad when I'm really not, so the doctor will write me a prescription. You know, it's hard for people like me who are really in pain when they go to the emergency room to convince somebody that you're really in pain, because there's so many in the world today that lie about it just to get drugs. And it's a problem in the medical industry. So, proper use of something is being abused. It's not intended to be recreational. It's not intended to be something that numbs the mind. And so, we have to be careful that we do not allow things to enslave us. The Christian should not be a slave to anything. To drugs, bad language, to immoral things that you find on the internet or wherever. And certainly those things can enslave the mind. When just left me the name of the preacher that came here years ago and talked about, and we used to, Art Adams. So Art Adams deals with a lot of people that are involved in addictive behaviors, whether it be pornography or drugs, alcohol, or what have you. Certainly he's done a lot of good work in that area and done some writing on it. I've heard recently some lessons that he presented on that. It's a big problem, and it's because people have allowed their minds to become addicted to different things, whether it be a substance or whether it be viewing something that's immoral. These things enslave the mind. And a phrase that I like is that at first sin offends, then we endure, and then we endorse. Sometimes people will resist sin, and it becomes something that becomes ingrained in our society, like today with the sin of homosexuality. There was one at one time when most people were against that. And then there certainly has been a movement to make that more acceptable. And it has become something that was offensive, and then people endured it, and now people endorse it. And that's because people allow themselves to become enslaved by something that they should not. So a principle here when we are deciding whether or not we are going to participate in something is it going to be something that will bring me under bondage? And we do not need to be enslaved. And Paul said, even if it's lawful for me, I'm not going to be enslaved by it. And certainly there are things that people decide that may be good in and of themselves, that I'm not going to do that anymore. I know some people that became addicted to Facebook, and they decided, I'm just going to cancel my account. It's taking up too much of my time. I'm getting in too many arguments with people, or it's tying me up in knots emotionally because the things that I see make me so mad, or I can't help but comment on this and that. And so they decided, enough, I'm not going to do that. Or they've turned off their television or turned off their cable because they decide, I'm spending too much time, or there's too much distraction, there's too much temptation to watch filth that is on there. And so rather than have this conflict all the time of how much am I going to watch, what am I going to watch, how am I going to protect my kids from it, just turn it off. because people make a decision. I'm not going to be enslaved by that. I'm not going to cause others to be enslaved by it. So need to make sure that whatever you participate in is not something that brings you under bondage and becomes addictive. Another principle is the principle of equivocation. And you may notice a pattern here that we're using a lot of E words. But equivocation, will it hypocritically cover my sin or my desires? Equivocation is just a long word for lying. If you ever want to call somebody a liar, call them an equivocator. And they won't know what you mean. And by the time they look it up, you'll be long gone. But equivocation is lying. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 16, as free, not using your liberty as a cloak for vice, but as servants of God. Well, how do we apply that to us? Well, somebody may make the comment that, you know, the Bible doesn't say I can't go see an R-rated movie. Well, why is it that you want to go see the R-rated movie? It may be because of the story. It may be because of the action. It may be because you know that there's some things in it that are inappropriate. And really, you're using your liberty and your desire and saying, well, I can go see that. You can't tell me that I can't, because you know why you really want to go see it. Don't use your liberty as a cloak for vice. You know, the Bible does not say thou shalt not wear a bathing suit in public either. You know, years ago in Panama City, the Panama City Beach congregation, there was a woman that went forward on Sunday evening because not coming forward to confess anything, but they had their Lord's Supper. People would come forward to the front for them to be served, and she came forward in a bathing suit. Because, I mean, she was on the beach. She was at Panama City Beach, and that's beach attire, I guess. But, you know, where does the Bible say she can't do that? Well, there's a lot that the Bible has to say about modesty and what's appropriate. And, you know, people will make arguments about, you know, what's appropriate where. And really, a lot of the times it's not somebody that's really trying to profess godliness. If somebody is making the argument that it's okay to be immodest in certain situations, they're probably not a person that really has the desire to be Christ-like in mind. If you're trying to make excuses to see how close you can get to sin, you're not really applying these principles. So you're equivocating. You're using your so-called liberty, which I would disagree that this is a liberty at all to be immodest, but using that argument to participate in something that you really shouldn't, because your desire is to be like everybody else and not to be different, and to participate in something that is really not what you need to do. Just a couple of quotes on this subject. There's a writer named Art Buchwald, who in the past, he said, as far as I am concerned, summer blows in when the Sports Illustrated bathing suit edition hits stands. My wife demanded to know why I had brought the issue home. I am dying to read about bicycle racing in Switzerland. You know, why won't you admit that most of the women's swimsuits are not designed for swimming? What are they designed for? Flagrant flaunting. Also, another quote, are you aware that although the swimsuit market is worth billions of dollars, only 5% of the suits ever get wet? The bathing suit is a marvel of American engineering. The less fabric they use, the more they can charge for it. Let's say the bathing suit is worn not to tease a man, but just to get a good suntan. Why does a woman want a good suntan? To attract the opposite sex. So, and here's somebody that's just a syndicated writer that he can clearly see that what the purpose of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition is. Last year, we got an ad in the mail for Sports Illustrated. I think it was some ridiculously low cost. And if you subscribe to it, you got an NFL jacket. So I thought, well, I'm going to subscribe to it, get Ethan a Carolina Panthers jacket because he wanted one. So we're getting the Sports Illustrated coming in now. And the interesting thing is it has Jarrell's name on it, too. She never reads it. But anyway, here comes the Sports Illustrated edition in the mail. And so first thing I do is take it out of the mailbox and I toss it in the trash. And the Sports Illustrated edition is the most popular edition. I just threw away the most popular edition of the magazine. But, you know, what's the purpose of that magazine, of that issue? Well, it's obvious what the purpose of it is. It's eye candy. It's something for people to use to lust and doesn't, you know, really have any place in the home of a Christian. You know, I could equivocate and say, well, you know, there's good articles in here. I'm, you know, what if I'm missing a really good article? Because this is an actual issue of Sports Illustrated. There might be something good in here for me to read. Well, I would just want to admire the locales where they photograph these women. You know, there's some great photography in here. I'm a big fan of great photography. You see how people can equivocate? They can really lie to themselves. Whether it's watching TV and what they choose to watch or where they choose to go or where they choose to vacation. You know, there are a lot of people that like to go to the beach. And we like to go, but you know, we spend very little time at the beach because we're usually eating somewhere. That's what a lot of people do when they go to the beach is they just find seafood. But a lot of people go to the beach because they want to put on their sunglasses and they want to go hang out at the beach. And they let their eyes wander. So what I'm saying here is when you're making a decision about what can I participate in, is it immoral? Is it immodest? Yeah, be honest with yourself. What is it that you're wanting to do? You go see that movie that you shouldn't see. Are you willing to, if it gets too bad, are you willing to get up and leave? I don't really hear too many people that get so disgusted with how worldly a movie is that they get up and leave. They just endure it and then maybe tell others not to go see it. Well, that was just filthy. You wouldn't believe all the things that I just saw. Well, you made a decision to go see it. And it's very easy these days to check out something before you go see it. There's a website called Kids in Mind that gives you a detailed review of what movies are appropriate for kids and what are not. And I would submit that it ought to be called Christians in Mind, too, because the things that are inappropriate for kids are inappropriate for adults, too. And too many times we think that it's okay for adults to fill their minds with garbage, but it's not okay for the kids to do it. And why is it okay for us? Because we're equivocating. We're really not practicing godliness. And we should be aware of what goes into our minds. I understand that sometimes people will argue, well, you can hear that anywhere. You hear stuff just as bad at school or just as bad at work as you do in the movies. And the old expression that you can't, you know, keep a bird from landing it on your head, but you can keep it from building a nest there, comes to mind. That sometimes you can't avoid what it is that you see or what you hear, but you can certainly look at King David and see what the results were when he saw something that he shouldn't see and failed to look away. And it's the same with Christians. You can't control everything that goes on around you, but what you can control, you ought to. So don't equivocate and make things worse. We also need to use the principle of example. Is it something that is going to help others? In Romans chapter 14, Paul said, therefore, let us pursue the things which make for peace and the things by which one may edify another. Do not destroy the work of God for the sake of food. All things indeed are pure, but it is evil for the man who eats with offense. It is neither good to eat meat nor drink wine nor do anything by which your brother stumbles or is offended or is made weak. 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9 warns us about making our liberty a stumbling block to those who are weak. Some specific things are being addressed here, which we won't go into a lot of detail, but the problem is that some people thought that the eating of meats was wrong and some did not. And Paul made the point that you can eat whatever it is that was put before you and not ask any questions for conscience sake. But if there's somebody around you that is offended, don't say, okay, well, you ought to eat this. You know, you're crazy for not eating this. Don't try to offend. Do not offend somebody else's conscience and force them to do something against their conscience. You might be able to teach them better. You might be able to teach them that these things are okay under the new law, because certainly there were dietary restrictions under the old law, which those who came out of Judaism may have had a hard time always accepting that. So the point here is that the things that you do, is it going to be something that will help others? The preacher that I heard preach this sermon years ago said that he one time was flying, and the flight that he was on, the flight attendant came by, and they were giving out free champagne. And he said the thought crossed his mind, I never drank that. I wonder what that tastes like. But he didn't take any of it, and he said, no, thank you. And then while he was on the flight, another passenger came up and said, you know, I heard your voice, and are you so-and-so? And he said, yes, I am. He said, well, I've been listening to you on the radio. I've heard you know, many of your lessons for years and struck up a conversation. And he thought, you know, what if, you know, thinking about having that drink, you know, and then what kind of example would that have been to this person that recognized me? Sometimes people get away from everybody else and they behave in a different way when they're away from their family, their friends, or their congregation. And not thinking about, you know, the example, they may think about being an example at some times in their life, but at other times they leave that behind. I also heard a story about a bus driver that a man gets on the bus, he gets his money out of his pocket, he hands it to the bus driver, the bus driver gives him his change. The man gets back to his seat and he starts counting his money. He gave me way too much change. And, it was a lot more than what I should have gotten. And so when he gets off the stop, he goes back to the driver and says, you gave me $50 too much here. And the bus driver said, yeah, I knew that I gave you too much. You know, I was at your congregation last week and heard you preach a sermon on honesty, and I just wanted to see what you do. Well, isn't that interesting? And he said, I watched you in the rearview mirror. I knew that you knew that you had too much because I watched you sit back there and count it. So, interesting story. Will my example be something that will help others? What will my example do? Will it be something that draws people to Christ? If I participate in whatever it is I'm considering, is it going to be something that is going to draw people closer to Christ? Or is it going to be something that even makes people think I'm a Christian at all? Will I draw people to Christ, or will I repel people away from Him? That's the principle of example. Will it help others? The final point is emulation. Certainly we've heard the phrase, what would Jesus do? And it's certainly, even though it's kind of faded out of prominence recently, it's always a question that we should ask. When Jesus denied Himself, He said that He denied Himself, and we needed to deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow Him. If we would do what Jesus would do, we certainly have to do that, take up our cross and follow Him. 1 John chapter 2, verse 6 says, He who says he abides in Him ought himself also to walk just as he walked. So that's what would Jesus do? It is always a great question. It's very simple. It's a very front of mind thing. It can be, unless you're trying to block Jesus out of your mind. But to ask yourself before you say something, before you do something, before you participate in something, before you react, how would Jesus handle this? What would He do in this situation? Or what would I do if I knew that Jesus was here with me? People behave differently sometimes when they're in this building. They behave differently when they're at home. They behave differently when they're around their family and friends, because they're concerned about their reputation. to put them in a different situation, they become a different person. Because they may be emulating things that are around them. They may be emulating their environment, like the chameleon that changes colors. But Jesus doesn't change. He's always going to react the same way. We need to ask ourselves, what would I do or say if I knew that He was here? So when it comes to hard decisions, if we ask ourselves these different principles or apply these different principles, edification, excess, enslave, and equivocation, example, and emulation, you can call this the ease of decision-making. Get it? It's easy. These are the ease of decision-making. So if your heart's in the right place, then decision-making is easy. Just apply these things and be honest with yourself, and a lot of these types of decisions will fall into place. If you're truly trying to serve God, what to do many times is not that difficult. So I hope these things will be useful to you. If in any way we can help you be obedient to the gospel of Christ, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.